This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you've been struggling with your weight, Mochi Health is here to help. Mochi Health is a long-term weight loss solution personalized to fit your unique needs and goals. Meet one-on-one with board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians who are on a mission to listen. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medications at an affordable set price and get them delivered to their home each month. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 at checkout for $40 off your first month of membership.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Sometimes the best thing you can do is listen. And I had the opportunity at the end of March to talk to somebody who had some perspective on something I never knew about Kansas City. There was a Kentucky Derby winner back in 1938 that was right here from Kansas City. So I enlisted my pal Diane Houston into this. I said, hey, Diane, let's talk horse. We got Lauren, the 1938 Kentucky Derby winner, buried right here in Kansas City.
Well, there's a... I think it's little known. I mean, I didn't know much about it until, as I said in the intro, Diane, I was sitting at a Romeo's meeting with my friend Bob DeWitt, who used to have horses here in Kansas City. And he said, do you know there's a Kentucky Derby winner buried at like 81st and Mission Road? To which I said, no. And so I immediately called you. I go, there's a horse buried at 81st and Mission
Kansas
Road.
Kansas horse?
Holy cow. And here we have it in the middle of a neighborhood in Prairie Village, Kansas. The 1938 Derby winner, Lauren, is buried right there next to the father. I mean, it's really an amazing story and one that I don't think many people know about here in Kansas City.
I knew about it, but I mean, probably because I'm digging into history as much as I am, but I've yet to be there. I've actually never visited. So I'm going to make a point, because it's not far from where I live, to visit this rogue graveyard in the middle.
And it's a beautiful graveyard. I went the other day, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I guess, after I had heard about this story at the end of March, and I'm like, I've got to go check this place out. So my wife and I were out for a Saturday afternoon and enjoyed a nice lunch at Southside Grill, and then moseyed on over to try to find this. And we're looking for, like, where in the heck is this? And all of a sudden you end up in this gated neighborhood. We're like, oh, I don't know. We're supposed to be here, right? And there it is, right in the middle of the street. I don't necessarily want to call it a cul-de-sac. It's more of a, I guess it's a circular type of thing. And there's houses all around it. And right in the middle, I guess, of the cul-de-sac, if you will, are these two headstones, one for the father and one for Lauren, the 1938 Kentucky Derby winner. And then I had no idea the history of horses here in Kansas City.
Well, there is actually kind of an equine history in Kansas City, and it has to, you know, if you look at Longview Farm, you look at, this was the Wolford Farm, which is also connected to a prominent Kansas Cityan. There is a history, especially when you go from the city life to the suburbs. And so when people, we've talked about this before, when people started to buy up land to kind of get out of the city, there was, you know, it was a thing of the rich to have that house outside of the city. And then, well, I have all this land, what am I going to do with it? And then they start raising and stock raising as a hobby, where other people were stock raising to live. So, you know, then in the story of Lauren and how he ended up there, and it's spelled Lawrin, so it's kind of like Lauren, but it's Lauren, is really interesting because, you know, the guy who owned the horse, Herbert Wolf, which is Wolf Brothers, Kansas City, you know, clothing manufacturer, if you will, very well known, last store closed, I think, in the early 90s. If you look at the history of the Wolf Brothers, and then the fact he kind of fell into this idea of stock raising. So the story is, or I should say, really thoroughbred horse raising. He became one of the best known people in the nation. It wasn't even like a Kansas City thing, like, hey, this horse is fast, let's see if we can throw him in the Derby. By the way, that's not how it works anyway. But it didn't evolve like that. So it's a really cool story. And yeah, and such an honor to be able to have that graveyard at least survive. And it shows the kind of, provenance that it had for the family too. Like, well, that's a pretty impressive grave site.
It really is. And I was gonna say, it's not something that is hidden that you really have to search for.
No.
I mean, you literally go to like 81st and Mission and there it is. Yeah. And it's as manicured as you'd ever see. Like it looks mm-hmm. like a display, and obviously people are proud of what goes on there. But, you know, I think the story kind of does start with the Wolf brothers, though. I mean, if they're not around, you know,
yeah.
and start this area and then eventually sell all their land to what now is Prairie Village, Kansas.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not sitting here talking about this horse. I mean, it's one of those things that we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm. people were just amazed. Like, everybody was driving by and sending us text messages like, all right, where's this horse? I can't find this horse. And so literally right behind the Prairie, not Corinth. The Prairie Village shop, the Corinth Square.
Corinth Square.
Yeah. Is where this horse is up in that neighborhood. And it's not like something that you're just going to stumble upon. You've got to be looking for it. The good news is it's on Apple Maps. It's on Waze. Google Maps has it right there. So it really is easy to find. And, you know, we talk about, you know, in sports a lot, Diane, like some of the greats mm-hmm. of Kansas City. I've never heard of this horse, Lauren. We've never mentioned this horse, Lauren. But I would think if you're starting to, you know, kind of come up with the history of Kansas City sports, we've got to work Lauren in, because that's a Kentucky Derby winner. That's as rare as, you know, watching Patrick Mahomes doing what he's doing, or even the Royals winning in 14 and 15 and Tom Watson dominating, you know?
It is it really coincides with like American Royal. It coincides with that, again, that livestock and that stockyards history. It's the same time period. And you're right that Lauren kind of got forgotten, and partially because it was, I'm going to say that in some ways, Wolf Brothers and Herb that ran the farm, really it was like a one and done. You know what I mean? Like it was like the greatest moment. And then nothing ever quite added up to it again. It's like how we felt after the 85 World Series until more recently. Like, mm-hmm. it's never going to happen again. But yeah, so Herb is the son of a guy who ended up starting a department store in Kansas City. He originally started one in Leavenworth. And so Herb is born in 1880 and ends up in Kansas City with his dad, of course. And they founded, his dad and his uncle founded Wolf Brothers department stores in 1868 in Leavenworth. And they have a whole long history in the family of, you know, clothing stores and making shirts and stuff like that. And so their store, the big one people remember was 11th and Walnut. And then later had shops at the Plaza, and then were Parkway Shopping Center when it became a thing. And they actually sold out of their stores in 1985 to a company that defunct. So then it was like the end of the era. But regardless, they had a lot of money. And so he became very interested early on in showing horses, not racing, showing horses. And so he began breeding in 1902, and he would show his horses at like the open park at Fairmont Park in Kansas City. Like the whole idea of like horses in a park in Kansas City throws me off. And then he ended up buying some land in 1902-ish, I think it is, right by Swope Park. So he ends up with a 40-acre farm in Oak, like in the Swope Park area. And he has that until, you know, about 1920, or so. And then in 1921, he buys up 160 acres at where Corinth Square, it should be called Wolford. Mm-hmm. And this farm was always called Warford, which makes sense. It's the name, of course, of the business and their last name. And so his farm was, the 160 acres was between 79th to 83rd Street and just west of Mission. So it's like the heart and soul of what this is. Now, he never lived there. He lived in the city. He never married, so this was like his thing. But he ended up building like a large barn surrounded by smaller ones, and they were grouped around like a huge exercise ring, and then a larger track that they said spanned almost a half a mile. So it was huge. And then had about a dozen trainers and attendants that took care of about 100 horses. And how he got into like going from like show horses into race horses is an interesting little story, because they said that he was show in the early 1930s. So like not long before he has a horse win the freaking Kentucky Derby, He's showing a horse called Belle Delight. I love, can I name a horse someday?
Yeah,
I
want to
name a freaking, give me, I want to name lipstick, nail polish. I really want to name a horse though.
Why lipstick really or nail polish are you going with those two names, Diane?
Because every woman that's listening right now knows that the names of lipstick and nail polish are always really clever. I really want to name.
Oh, you're talking about like the colors of
the
lipstick.
Name, and, the name,
oh.
The color. Yes.
Oh, I thought you were going to name your horse lipstick. I was like, what?
That's not original. I would be way more creative
or
than
nail
that.
Polish. You're going to name your horse nail polish? No, that doesn't make any sense.
No, I mean, no, there's some great names of actual colors of nail polish that I
got you.
I'm like, oh, that's a good one. I like that one. Anyway, so he has this horse, Belle Delight, and he loses at this show. And the judges, you know, went with another horse. And it turned out one of the judges was a part owner of the horse that won. And he's like, I'm out of this business. I'm not doing this anymore. And so he switches at that point in the early 1930s to actually buying and breeding thoroughbreds. And so he employs a trainer named Ben Jones, who is like, Google him. He's like this huge dude in like, you know, horse history, if you will. And this guy actually owned and operated a farm well outside of Kansas City in Missouri. And then actually came to Wolford and for employment. And he gave up his own farm temporarily to do work for the Wolf, for the Wolf family. In 1936, he has a horse named Billy Jones.
I kind of like that name. You named it after Billy Jones. I like it.
Is it a person? Who knows?
Who knows?
I mean, there's a lot of Billy Jones in the world.
You're naming your horse lipstick.
I wouldn't like lipstick. But Billy Jones in 1936 wins 10 races in a row. And that's a national record at the time. So, you know, obviously you can have like there was horse racing a little bit in the, but nothing major in Kansas City, which is why, of course, if you're going to race horses, you got to have some money because you got to go to Kentucky. You have to go to Florida. So the off season they would go to, and I'm sure it's the same today. I don't know much about horse history, but a lot of them would travel in the wintertime and go down to Florida. And then so they spend like the fall in California, and then they would end up kind of taking their horses from Florida up into Kentucky to race that circuit. And so that was kind of how they did things back in the day. And it wouldn't have been cheap because you took like you took all the horses with you because they all like they for relationship purposes and stuff. And so in 1937, he won 12 races at Churchill Downs, not the Derby, but still 12 races at Churchill Downs, which is pretty amazing. So this horse trainer he's got is like really good. And I should have mentioned, like you mentioned too, the grave, there is a this horse that he has, which is Lauren, that ends up winning the Kentucky Derby. You know, his parentage is great. So his dad, Insco, was born in 1928 in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. I love how we know more about these horses than I do about some people I've tried to research. And he purchased this horse for super cheap in like 1932. And at the time there was like this huge storm in Kentucky. And so all these other people that were going to bid in this auction couldn't make it to the auction, but Herb made it. And so it only paid $500 for this horse. And it ended up being like the horse. So by 1931, it was a winner book favorite for all these races. And then the horse broke its left leg. The mother of Lauren, and of course, Insco and his was bred with several different horses. Mm-hmm. But Lauren's mom was Margaret Lawrence. So Margaret Lawrence had other children as well. So, I mean, other horses.
Margaret Lawrence sounds like she's the presidential wife of somebody from the 1800s. Like she was the first lady, Margaret mm-hmm. Lawrence. Like that's not the name of a horse. I still think Billy Jones. I think that's
Billy Jones.
Billy Jones. I still think that's a good name for the horse. I don't know that Margaret Lawrence is a great horse name.
No, I don't love it. It would have been my choice, but again, nobody's asked me to name a horse. But yeah, so he's got this. So he is obviously buying these horses with good history in order to breed further. And so that, you know, essentially Lauren is born in 1935. So as 3-year-old horses are what race the Derby. And so this is a short career, if you will, but this all kind of fits into the picture. And he became so well known, and his horses start winning these races that, like, Cliff Durant, as in like the son of the car manufacturer, mm-hmm. bought a horse from him at this time period for $15,000. And let's do the math on that.
That's a lot back then.
$250,000 in today's money.
Well, for a horse. Today, but for a horse today, that is good. And that's a stud, and that's a superstar. $250,000 is now a kind of, I guess you could say, kind of a walk in the park. I mean, $250,000 today for some legit horse is a deal.
Yeah, I mean, true. But especially if you're racing for money. I mean, this isn't like you're like, look at my beautiful horse as you're sipping cocktails from your deck. Like, this right. horse is going out on a circuit, and you're hiring really expensive, well-trained trainers to be a part of this whole operation. I mean, he had dozens of employees running this farm in Corin Square.
In Corin Square, yeah.
So in any case, by 1937, August 37, they were actually predicting a horse named Joe Schneck, which I looked up. I was like, what is this? Joe Schneck.
Like Joe, first name, Schneck, last name?
Correct. And I don't know. I think that he was a Russian producer, like Hollywood producer. Oh. So I don't know if maybe like they were friends. By the way, I should have mentioned that our buddy Herb was friends with some of the most powerful people: Truman, Roosevelt, William Randolph Hearst.
Oh my God! He
sold a prize bull to William Randolph Hearst for $50,000.
Oh my, what?
Yeah. So the history of this guy is incredible, and he's single and living the life. I mean, it's just. Yeah. It's unbelievable. So he ends up in the 1937, they're really paying attention to what's going on in the farm.
Sure.
And so there, he has a horse named Esco High, all one word, Esco High, that won a race in Tropical Park in Florida. And like it set a new 6 furlong shot record. And he was like, if you bet on this horse for $2, if you bet on the horse at the time, it paid out $571. And that was because nobody predicted it.
Wow, like what's odds. That? Do you have that in today's numbers? It's
about $5,000. Oh, yeah. Right. So in any case, a ticket at the time, there were, like, just to give you an idea, $14,594 in bets were made on this race, and only $46 placed money on Esco High to win.
Wow.
I love it. I love it. Wow. And I bet you half of the bets were Wolf.
Yeah, right.
Like, I'm going to put my money on this one. Like,
it's funny.
On.
I mean, like, my friend Marlon's man owns a lot of horses down in Florida. And we were down there for the Super Bowl, and we did our baseball trip down to Miami. And he took us around and, you know, showed us all the horses. And we got to meet the jockeys and all that kind of stuff. And I'll tell you what, the guys that own these horses, man, they know exactly who to bet on. They know exactly what's going on, and you can make some money. And so if you know, the owner is betting heavily on his horse, he probably knows something. He's just not doing it just because the other thing I've realized too, rich people don't spend money foolishly, right? So they kind of have an idea exactly why
that's
they're
why
rich.
They're rich.
They have an idea of what's going on. So you got to follow the guys who own the horse, find out who they're betting on, and follow in their footsteps.
Exactly. Yeah. So these race horses that he's got, he was really successful in this run in February 1938, which is what essentially starts getting him recognized even further. Like, maybe Derby's in it's going to happen this year. And as people that don't really follow horse racing, which I admittedly wasn't one that followed until we started talking about this, but, you know, really it's up to the day of who's going to be on that list of horses running, you know, racing at each race, and injuries, and I mean, it the entry fee is exorbitant, so you really have to put your money, literally and figuratively, put your money on what you're I mean, not anybody can just go, oh, my horse is pretty good and I got the money. Like, it doesn't work that way. But at the same time, like, there is, you have to know what you're doing, like you said. So in February 1938, Lauren was predicted, actually, like, in Kansas City, they were like, we think this might be the horse. And they were the only ones saying that. So, you know, Kansas City pride,
sure,
per
right.
usual.
Yeah.
Per usual. But he advanced, the horse advanced, and was a favorite at the $20,000 Flamingo Stakes in Miami. And the horse weighed 126 pounds, one of the larger of these horses. And he finished second to last. And everyone's like, no, you know, but he was born with like the horse always was never quite right. He had a problem with bowed tendons. So he would break down if he was raced too much. So that was a concern also. So like he would race and then you'd see that Wolf would pull him out of races for months just to get him back in shape again. And that's not normally how that works. You know, to win a triple crown, you got to be on your game. You know, it's a one after another. So Ben Jones was, of course, training these horses still. And in at this point, they said that he is now a possibility, even though he was a little bit off on that injury, that Lauren's a possibility for the Kentucky Derby and that, you know, this is going to be great. So at first, the predictions were that he would win 20 or that it was 20 to 1 odds that he, you know, would place or whatever or win. But it wasn't looking good. So the report, though, right before the race, because, of course, he go down early. The report before the race was April 28th was that that Lauren's workouts were making the clocker's eyes pop, like he was so good.
It sounds like an NFL scouting report right now, right before the draft. He's making the scouts' eyes pop.
Like they keep watching the clips over and over. So 3 days of rest before the mile and a quarter Derby final race, that's what they gave him. And, you know, there's a whole series of like Lauren had a luxury life the way that they treated this horse. It's like they put blankets on him during X time of day. I mean, it was no joke. I mean, down to a science what they did. So they thought at the time the newspapers were predicting that this horse named Stagehand was the one to beat. No one thought Lauren had this one at all. No one thought this. And so Stagehand in past races, like they're, you know, they just weren't sure about anybody else. So there were five in the battle, disagreements of who would win. And it was a $50,000 prize at the time. That was just, you know, the purse. Stagehand had beaten Seabiscuit just by a nose at the Santa Anita handicap like months before. So everyone's like, this is it. So the 64th Kentucky Derby, May 7th, 1938, Wolf predicts that Stagehand's not going to be able to finish high enough to win the prize. And then fate falls in and poor Stagehand got sick. He had a sore throat.
Oh, no.
Got to pull him for the race.
How do you know a horse has a sore throat?
I don't know. I don't like, do they cough?
I don't know.
Every horse lover in the, like listening to this is like, oh my God, they know nothing.
Right. And we don't. And that's perfectly fine. We know about the history of anything. Stuff, but we don't know how a horse has a sore throat.
I don't know how these things work. I do know he had 104 degree fever. So then they thought this poor same Fighting Fox was going to win. And he was the brother of the winner of the 1930 Derby. Gallant Fox, keep it in the family.
Right.
So the odds were 5-2 at this point. There were going to be 10 horses racing. Wolf went down a week beforehand, check out, you know, what was going on. And Kansas City sent their own train. They're like, we're going. It's just like today.
Like, so that's insane. So like the love of sports in Kansas City goes back to 1938. We rented a train to go to the Kentucky Derby.
We're going.
How many people do you know were on this train?
The exclusive train, I'm going to read off some names because you're going to be like, oh my God. First of all, I would say you'd be safe on that train. A lot of guns, I'm sure. 250 people on this train. There were two different trains. This is the one that they published the list of people. I was like, oh, an FBI agent's dream. All right. Here are the names that stood out to me. Jim Pendergast. Okay. So Boss Tom's brother, Crosby Kemper, Jim Balistrieri. And I'm just going to start. This is like Mafia 101 for the time. Jim Balistrieri, Frank Bonatti, Tony Gizzo, Charles Carollo. And Charles Carollo had just been accused of possibly, you know, assassinating the mob boss, like right at the same time period. They're all, of course, going. They're going to gamble this one out. So there's 60,000 people at that Kentucky Derby. And Lauren was ridden by Eddie Arcaro, who was 22 years old. 5'2", 114 pounds.
Wow.
This was his first race, and it was a last-minute substitution to get him on this. And Lauren was the largest of the horses, and there was another horse owned by William DuPont. The name sounds familiar. And the race was amazing, and it was one of the first that was ever broadcast.
And they're off. It's a clean break with Fighting Fox, Bowley, and Mountain Ridge jockeying for a spot. Me now, way on the outside, charges across the field just like the famous War Admiral. Now it's William Woodward's favorite Fox next to the rail. Meenal's coming strong. Now he's alongside with Mountain Ridge pounding at their heels as they pass the stands on the first lap of the mile and a quarter route. In the backstretch, it's another story. Hal Headley's Meenal is sailing away from Fighting Fox. Myron Selznick's Can't Wait's a close third, and Mountain Ridge is fourth in the pack. Rounding the turn into the home beat, it's still Meenal. Fighting Fox has dropped to fourth, and now Lauren, with Eddie Arcaro up, makes his bid. From fifth place, Eddie pushes Lauren right out in front, and they call this horse a sprinter. Close on Lauren's heels and coming fast is Dauber, but his bid's too late. This $50,000 pot is in the bag. Lauren's by a length. Another great derby goes on the books. 22-year-old Arcaro and his gallop mount have won their place in the charmed circle of Kentucky's Bluegrass Hall of Fame.
Well, that's pretty cool to actually hear that race.
Unbelievable.
And you know, the announcer, it's so old-timey sports announcer.
Hindenburg! You know? humanity!
It's like old-timey announcer, not just sports announcer, but announcer. And that really ends up being like one of the early championships we won here in Kansas City. And 250 people rode this train down there to check it out. Right. So it shows you kind of the love affair this town has had with sports dating back almost 100 years, right? Like, we've always kind of embraced that. And so it's really a shame we didn't see more from Lauren, because after that Kentucky Derby, I mean, there's really not much else to say.
Right. Well, but Wolf made a lot of money off of that. And there's a really cool overall sports history that's attached to this pairing that should be mentioned. For one, Wolf ended up winning that year $221,117. That's $4.7 million in today's money. Won that year more than any other horse owner in America. Eddie Arcaro, the guy who ran, that was the jockey, 22 years old at the time. It was his first time ever winning in, you know, Derby. Pretty cool. He has had more than American Classic races than any other jockey in history. He was the only rider to win the Triple Crown twice.
Oh, wow.
He won the Derby five times, tied for the most wins still in sports history.
Most Derby wins ever?
Tied for number one. And the first win was Lauren. And then he had the most wins at Preakness and Belmont Stakes with six each, that jockey. Like, no joke. Then, you know,
how many Triple Crowns did you say?
Two. And I'll talk about one of them is interesting, because after this point, so, you know, everybody goes back to Kansas City and they're like, what, this is amazing. Lauren never was able to really race again. There were people that would go and visit the stables when Lauren was out on the circuit that would go visit to see his parents, though. They were a sight to see. Mm-hmm. And then his siblings, which all kind of had a race history too, but nobody ever topped Lauren. So he wasn't raced in the Preakness or Belmont. They hadn't signed him up for it, so they couldn't even try for a Triple Crown. And his sister, Unerring, ran as a two-year-old and won the Dogwood Purse, which was a big honor at the time. And another horse, Technician, they thought it would run at Belmont. So after that, there was, you know, they considered it in the racing circuit. The following year, they thought Technician would be in the Derby. He did race. So another one, the following year, Herb Whoop had a horse in the race. It's like, you know, so standard, but had a horse in the race, but he never did. And that was that was it. Now, right after that, Ben Jones quit because of ill health. He was lying, though, because he actually went and worked for somebody else. And as a side note on this one, because this is unbelievable. So Ben Jones quits, and a week later, he's employed. And Ben Jones went on to train an additional five Kentucky Derby horses between 1938 and 1952. Wow. And a side note, Arcaro's second win in 1941, which was the Triple Crown, was one of Ben Jones' horses also. Crazy, right?
Yeah, that is just insane.
So the area, so you got to think about this too. So he blamed bad jockeys. And by 1940, Lauren's retired. his leg was in bad shape, but he was the father of six horses. So he's doing his duties. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Herb Wolf does really well in business. And I think it's cool to think, again, why are there horses in the middle of a subdivision? Wolf ended up selling to J.C. Nichols mm-hmm. in March 1955, most of the acreage. But the agreement was that he would maintain 90 acres, and he was getting up there in age. You know, he's getting older. So they agreed to this. And by the mid 1970s, Wolford Farm was developed by J.C. Nichols and took the community of private houses and streets. And they, you know, kind of did an homage to the fact it was a horse farm originally, thoroughbreds, by calling it Corinth Downs. Mm-hmm. And then Wolf dies in 1964. But in the area, and this is going to be, you're going to be like, are you kidding me? In the area, there's some ways that they've honored, you know, the horse history. Town and Country Subdivision Monuments, they're right off of, you know, I think it's Mission Road. There are horse heads. Mm-hmm. And then Miller Nichols, J.C. Nichols' son, who was the one that developed the area, he actually put his house in Corinth Downs, where right by the horses, he put his house there where the old farmhouse was, and he took the cupola off the top of it. And the house still has the cupola from the original home that stood on the property. So that's kind of cool. So I can't get in there to find out if it's still there, but I know it was there when he built it. And then there was another thing that you might not know. Corinth Square. Everybody's been to Corinth Square, and you know, they just remodeled it not that long ago. Yeah, it's unbelievable, right?
Yep.
Well, I have some sad news for you. Something I didn't ever know. There used to be a antique mall over there inside the original barn that our, you know, Lauren, a Kentucky Derby horse, stayed in. And that barn was on the property at 4101 West 83rd Street up until about, I think, probably 2017 when they tore it down.
Oh, wow.
So that was all they made it into the part of the shopping center. And unfortunately, after the antique mall closed in 2018, the developers decided out with the old, unfortunately, and in with the new, but we do still have Lauren's grave.
It's pretty awesome to hear that story of Lauren, but it's also pretty awesome to realize that was kind of how the love affair of sports in Kansas City got started. A train taken to the Kentucky Derby, chartered by 250 Kansas Cityans. Sounds a lot like what we do today to go watch the Chiefs and the Royals and the Sporting KC team and the current as well. Sports in Kansas City is alive and well, and it has a history dating all the way back to 1938.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro. What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.